Well, it's really great to be here at this meeting at Newton with this constellation of old and new friends and some of these great talks we've been enjoying. I got a couple of pictures in here. There's Nick getting his caricature, and we see some of the other events here going on. There's Stephen and Paul and Stephen and Michael and lots of others here over this week. We've been having a great time, and I think it's a moment maybe to thank our immortal organizers who are presiding at that wonderful banquet last night with poetry and pictured back here. This was 12 years ago, presiding at the earlier conference. So thank you very much, you guys, Simon and Dennis. Yeah, so 12 years ago, there we were. The Newton Institute looked kind of the same back then. I gave a talk on soap bubble geometry and went punting on the cam with John Sullivan, and Ken Brackey was here, who got a lot of exercise doing that, as the picture here shows. And actually, a joint paper with him acknowledged that meeting and was following earlier work by Cox and Ware and Vaz on cylindrical bubble clusters. But today I want to talk about the least perimeter tile. It'll be in three space eventually with n faces, but we should warm up by thinking about the much easier 2D case. So that's just looking in the plane at what unit area n-gon for fixed n, and we'll work our way up, tile, unit area tile, minimizes perimeter. So the best n-gon tile. Well, of course, for n equals 3, the triangle, the best triangle, the least perimeter triangle, the tiles is the equilateral triangle. So there's a very easy case. Or for n equals 4, the best 4-gon is a square. For n equals 6, with even less perimeter, the best hexagon is the regular hexagon. And actually, much more is known about regular hexagons, right? Simon mentioned earlier this wonderful theorem of Hales's, which said that regular hexagons are not only the best hexagons, but the best among all mixtures of any unit area tiles, polygonal or curvy linear, just the very best you can ever do. And he actually started out by looking at a large square, or you can think of it as identified as a torus, so that he didn't have to worry about infinities. And then there were two main lemmas in his proof. The first, an easy lemma of the type we've talked about before. Using Euler's formula, you can show that the average number of edges is at most 6. So that was his easy lemma. And then his famous hard lemma was this hexagonal isoperimetric inequality. What you'd like to show is that the perimeter of any tile divided by the perimeter of the regular hexagon is greater than or equal to 1. But you have to add, to make it true, penalties for bulging out, which would make it better, a certain amount of area x, or for having more than 6 sides, which would be cheating and make it more like a circle. But with those penalties, he was able to prove this inequality. And from there, it's very easy to prove the theorem, because now you just take that inequality for all tiles and average over all the tiles. And the average amount of bulging, well, if one tile bulges out, the neighboring tile bulges in an equal amount, so the bulging cancels. And the n minus 6 term, as you average, is favorable, because on the average you have to have at most 6 edges. And so out comes Hales's theorem. There's a lot more to it than that. It's a difficult theorem.
Why do you say at most 6 and not equal 6?
No, you can have squares, for example, where the average number of sides is 4.
Oh.
Right? So it doesn't have to be 6. We're just tiling here. So I love this theorem so much that I realized I had to tile the kitchen floor with hexagons, realizing, of course, that this would be very good, minimizing perimeter. They wouldn't have to use as much of that grout stuff, you know. So I thought this would be great. Which leads to the story of the contractor and the hexagonal tiles, because in the middle of the job, of course, the contractor ran out of grout. Now, these guys always have excuses, right? But his excuse? He said, oh, well, he said, you made me use these regular hexagons with all this extra perimeter. Well, this was the wrong man and the wrong time for that excuse, right? I had a little lecture already for him, you know. I said, well, actually, you know, so I had a good story for him. There is a problem, though, with hexagonal tiles that was pointed out by Gary Larson. And that is, there's so much symmetry that the bees really can't use maps to find their way around the honeycomb. See, everything looks the same. Yeah, there, it must be talking about Fred Almgren. So now, a corollary of hexagons being greater, you can give a simpler proof, is that when n is greater than 6, the best n-gon is just a hexagon with some extra vertices stuck in the middle of the edges. So we've actually solved all the higher cases. And you may have noticed there's one case missing so far. What's the most efficient pentagonal tile? Here's the one case where, of course, you cannot use a regular tile because the regular pentagons just don't fit together. And you might think you can't tile with pentagons at all, but you can. There are lots of ways to tile with pentagons. There are 14 known. There may be more. A few of the last ones were discovered by this amateur mathematician, Marjorie Rice. Of course, we all love pentagons. We see them as faces on some of our three-dimensional favorite shapes, like the pyritohedron, which occurred in the Weir-Feland structure. That's the associated with pyrite, or fool's gold. So which of these pentagons is best to tile with? Well, it turns out there's a tie. There are two good pentagons. One is the so-called the chiro and the prismatic. They both have the feature that they have two right angles and three 120 degree angles. They both have exactly the same perimeter for unit area. The chiro one is quite famous. You'll see it all over the web. You can buy these chiro tiles. They're called this because if you go to Cairo, you don't even have to go to the museum. They're out on the street. It's sort of amazing, getting dirty and all, you know, not something, but this beautiful shape. There you are. You'll find it all over Cairo. The prismatic tile is also known as the barn or house tile. It looks like the shape of a barn. I found some around Williamstown, too. Of course, the height of the house isn't determined by the angles. So you have to say a little more. It's best to circumscribe the shape about a circle. This is an example of the two-dimensional theorem of Lindelof that says that if you're given angles, the least perimeter unit area polygon is circumscribed about a circle. So that's true in both of those cases there. We actually, some students and I, were able to prove more about these chiro and prismatic tiles. Not only that they're the best tiles, but actually they provide the best tilings in the sense that you can't beat them by any mixtures, even, of convex pentagons. So that was a joint theorem with these eight students that I've been working with over some of the summers, and the paper appeared in the notices of the American Mass Society. They're the authors. And there were, again, just to tell you the ideas that were used in this kind of an argument, again, you always start out with Euler, which in this case says that on the average, in a very average sense, there are at least three angles in each pentagon of degree 3, which therefore average 120 degrees on the average. And then convexity, whenever you have a convex function, you're better off being at the average. And there are lots of convex functions around, and so it's a consequence of various kinds of convexity that it's best to have exactly 3 of 120, and 2 of 90. So that's how you get to these particular pentagons. For example, if you take the formula for the perimeter of a pentagon or an n-gon inscribed around a circle, mainly is based on the cotangent function, which is convex at least until half the angle is pi over 2. That is, as long as the shapes that you're looking at are convex. There was one complication I should mention, and that is when you're looking at mixtures, which we won't be thinking about today mostly, but if you are looking at mixtures, there's the possibility that some of the pentagons will degenerate into quadrilaterals and triangles, and you have to consider them separately. And now the average number in the pentagons might be different than in the quadrilaterals. It might be smaller in the quadrilaterals. It might be 3.1 in the pentagons, which makes no physical sense and would be a problem, except mathematically we don't care. We live in these imaginary universes where you can allow polygons that have 3.1 large angles and 1.9 small angles. So Euler's formula is still true. So there's one kind of technique that came up there. And then you just have to compare the triangles, quadrilaterals, and pentagons using some linear approximations. But I really enjoyed these pictures and all, and so when I was invited to have a blog at the Huffington Post, I wanted to talk about this. But back then, I thought you had to tie these columns in with the news. You know, it's really a news site. Well, fortunately, there was that news back then about the honeybees dying out, right? So I decided to entitle my column, Can Math Survive Without the Bees? And make the transition from the news to what I wanted to talk about in one sentence. How did I start out here? The recent reports on the disappearance of bee populations have omitted mention of their role in the longest standing open problem in mathematics, which takes you right into Hales. And then I had some of these pictures in there. Now, there was one flaw in this new result that I talked about, and that was that chiral prismatic tilings cannot be beaten by mixtures of convex pentagons, we had to assume. Now, I thought this was a rather silly assumption. The reason we needed it was because the convexity of cotangent, for example, only holds out until half the angle is pi over 2, that is, as long as the polygon is convex. But it seems so silly to use a non-convex pentagon, right? It's very inefficient, has huge perimeter for the area enclosed. But that doesn't mean that it might not pay off to have a few non-convex pentagons so that the rest of the pentagons could be more nearly regular. So that was the issue, and I hoped it would be easy to resolve, and I gave it to my 2012 geometry group, and Zane continued the work in a senior thesis. And I asked him if he wanted to tell you anything about that.
If someone would consider tilings that are linked by pentagons, last year's geometry group had the best tilings by convex pentagons, but were unable to remove the convexity assumption from their results. We found some restrictions this year on the types of convex and non-convex tilings that might do better.
And here's Brian.
In the serious question about whether we can make the diatomic pentagon to be chiral prismatic tilings remains open, unplanned.
Yeah, so Hales, of course, approximated the plane with large squares or large tori. You could do a much easier problem if you took a small torus that would be tiled by, say, four tiles, and then prove which ones are best. But even those arguments were kind of interesting, and I just thought I'd show you some of the ingredients that went into their arguments without talking about it a lot. So here was one ingredient. So we're looking at pentagons. We know we want to inscribe them around a circle. If you're given one angle, then the most efficient unit area pentagon is inscribed about the circle, and the other angles are all equal. If, on the other hand, you're given one side, then you want the other sides to be equal, and you want it to be inscribed in a circle. And if you're given more complicated kinds of configurations, you can show that more symmetric ones are better. So these are kind of arguments. I'm mentioning these because, you know, one of the grand goals mentioned in the call to this conference here is proving things about the minimality of the Kelvin structure, for example. And who knows, some of these ideas might pay off. Here's what Maggie said about that work.
This summer, we proved that prismatic pentagonal tiles are the best way to tile certain flat torus with six equal area pentagons. You can't tile with seven, and now we're working on eight.
And it's been fun working with these students. We have about 25 around for them summer. Four belong to me. They come from all over the world, and maybe you'll tell your students to apply next year. Okay, now let's get to the announced topic for today, from two-dimensional space up to three-dimensional space. What is the best n-hedral tile? So now we have unit volume, we want to minimize surface area, and we're going to fix n. Now this is related, it's not the same as Kelvin's problem. Kelvin was looking for the least perimeter way to tile space, but perhaps allowing lots of different shapes, and not necessarily polyhedra. And his conjecture was to take an octahedron, truncate it, so you get a shape something like this. Then you let it relax a little bit more. The perimeter goes down a little as the angles adjust to those perfect 120 degree angles, for example. And so that was the Kelvin conjecture, which stood for 100 years until the announcement of the Ware Phelan counterexample, which was built up of other 14 hedra mixed in with the fool's gold blue irregular dodecahedron, that pyritohedron, which beat Kelvin by 0.3%, and then had many applications, such as the ideal structure for the Beijing Olympics water cube swimming pavilion. And there's actually an exhibit then that was produced on the roof of the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. So this has a great implications and history. And for a word on this, recorded 2 years ago at the conference in Edinburgh, Ware himself said...
The Ware Phelan structure was actually the subject of a prehistoric email in the early days, because overnight we were able to send it to Ken Bracca in a very compact coded message, to which he replied, "Congratulations, first thing in the morning."
Yeah, Ken is very responsive about that, and we miss him a little at this conference. So that leaves open the question about whether Ware Phelan is actually the best structure. So that's a very difficult problem. I don't know if there's any hope of proving that in the near future. Here's what John said about that in Scotland.
Ware Phelan has so much less symmetry than Kelvin. It's a beautiful example of symmetry breaking. But that means it's going to be very hard to prove anything about it. We have some hope of finding a restricted problem where we can prove Kelvin is best for the restricted problem. But I don't have much hope that we'll actually see a full proof of Ware Phelan, even though I suspect it is the best.
But meanwhile, the Kelvin cell is still the best known single tile. If you're going to tile all of space with one tile, isohedral tiling, the Kelvin cell is the best known, even though it is curvilinear, it is not a polyhedron. So that's that a little tie in there. Now back to our main question, what is the best n-hedral tile? So we'll start, so this is one, this was a question actually that was also considered by some of my recent student groups. And the first case would be n equals 4. So now, and also I invite audience help here. So what is the best, the most efficient four-hedron, that is tetrahedron? Well, you would guess?
You didn't say tile.
Tile, yeah, best four-hedral tile, right? So you would guess. Now they can guess that. John wouldn't guess this because I've warned him already. So most people guess the regular one, of course, and which is very efficient, but it has the problem that it doesn't tile, despite Aristotle's claims to the contrary. Yeah. Oh, Aristotle said yes, that regular tetrahedron tiled space, yeah. So, but he was wrong about that, and it's still false. So, yeah, so you could take half of a square pyramid. Now, square pyramid tiles, of course, if it's the right shape, because it's a sixth of a cube. There's one based on each face of the cube going into the centroid in the middle as the apex. So you could take half a square pyramid, and that doesn't do as well as the regular tetrahedron, but maybe that's the best. Actually, it turns out, yeah, you were going to say? Actually, it turns out that there are better ones. There's this one with these isosceles faces that's a third of a triangular prism, which brings it down to about 7.41. And this has proved to be the best oriented tile, as long as you're not allowed to tile with a tile and inversions of the tile. This is the best you can do. If you allow inversions of the tile, well, those haven't been completely classified. The tetrahedra, the tile with inversions. The tetrahedra, the tile in this oriented sense without inversions, were completely classified by Goldberg, and so the students were able to go in and just check which ones actually had the least perimeter. So that's partially settled, the n equals 4 case. What about n equals 5, the best 5-hedral tile? Triangular prism is super good. It's better than, so I was hoping you'd start with the square pyramid. The square pyramid, which has area about 8, of course the best square, but better than that, is the equilateral triangular prism. That's right. And not only is it the best 5-hedral tile, It's the best fivehedron, whether or not you ask it to tile. So that makes it easier to prove, right? That makes it much easier to prove. Although the proof in the literature due to Suxdorf back in 1857 was a rather horrible thing, and anyone who cited it worried about it, whether it was even correct. It was very hard to follow. So the geometry group in 2012 came up with a much nicer proof that it's the best fivehedron.
So, sorry, for the square pyramid, is there only one height of square pyramid that tiles?
As far as I know, there's only one height that tiles.
And so the A equals 8 is for that.
Not for that square pyramid that tiles, right. The best square pyramid is a little better than that, but still not as good as the triangular prism. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little taller, I think, the best one. So here's what Stephen says about that.
We found a complicated 1857 proof by Suxdorf that the right equilateral triangle prism is a perimeter minimizing fivehedron for a given volume. This summer, we think we found a nicer proof.
Yeah, so what was the idea of their proof? Well, combinatorially, there are really just two possibilities, a triangular prism, maybe distorted, and a pyramid. And it's easy to check what the best pyramid is and see that it's not as good as the equilateral triangular prism. So that can be eliminated right away. And then you have to study all shapes of the triangular prism. But you can take advantage, there are really two types of triangular prisms that are in running. One is the one with vertical sides, which is going to be the winner. And the other one is a truncated tetrahedron. You have to worry about two. But the way to study these is to use Lindelof's theorem that the winner is going to be circumscribed about a sphere. And in fact, more is known than that. For the minimizer, each face has to be tangent to the sphere at its centroid. So that gives you a lot of information. And using that information, a little geometry, they were able to show that the certain equilateral triangular prism of the certain height that makes it circumscribed about the sphere is the winner for n equals 5, even among non-tiles. Lindelof is actually an n-dimensional theorem. That's right. That's right. Holds in all dimensions. Okay. What about n equals 6? Actually, you know, when I ask this guy a lot, a typical student cannot name a sixhedron. They can't think of any sixhedra. But of course, this is the easy one. This is the easy one. The answer is a cube, and this has been known for a long time. And of course, it's much easier. So first of all, it's not just the best tile, it's the best sixhedron. And second of all, it's very symmetric. And proving that symmetric things are optimal is much easier. And so Phaeus Toth had done this back in 1948. So that is by far the easiest case. So we've seen already the three cases about which something is known. We know that the cube is the best sixhedron. We know that the triangular prism is the best fivehedron. And we know that a certain tetrahedron is the best oriented tile. So those are the three cases about which something has been proved. So now we're going to start venturing. Yes, go ahead.
So the question of which tetrahedral tile is still open.
That's right. If you allow tilings by the tile and inversions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there some that are known not to tile?
Yes.
And
Goldberg Goldberg gave a classification of all tilings by tetrahedra. But later criticism showed that his argument was not complete unless you assumed orientation preserving, even though he gave many that weren't orientation preserving. So there are lots of examples of non-orientation preserving one. And of all the known examples, the one I gave is the best.
But it could be that all the tetrahedra that beat your best tiling tetrahedron can be shown not to tile. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Even without answering the question fully of which tetrahedron.
Each tile that don't...
Maybe the ones where the tiling is unknown are all bad.
No, you can take a tetrahedron that's nearly regular. It won't tile, and
right,
it beats our tile.
No, And that's known, but not the tile.
The regular one, but what about nearly regular?
Well, yeah,
so there are a lot. No, so there are a lot that don't tile but beat our. There are many examples that don't tile but beat our best tile.
It's something near regular. It's probably known.
Yes, but then you go out farther. So, but I see. Okay. So, but that's an interesting approach, right?
I kind of. It could be.
Possible. I like that
approach. It
could approach.
Be possible to prove the full theorem about.
Without
answering the Goldberg question.
Without classifying all the yes, and that would be the way to do it. Yes. And in fact, that's one of the two, I'll mention this later, but that's one of the two projects that I'm suggesting to students because it seems rather accessible compared to some of these other questions. Yeah, exactly right. Okay, best seven-hedral tile. Okay, now anybody's allowed to answer. Because I don't think anybody knows.
You had the barn
before. I had the what?
Barn.
Oh, so we had these, the barn.
Hexagonal prisms that have cross-sections like.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, well that's the conjecture, right? The chiroprism, or it could be the prismatic prism. Yeah, so that's the best one known, just prisms based on the best planar five-gon. The prism, of course, will have two more faces, and that, we're convinced, is the best seven-hedral tile, tying with the prismatic prism. Yep. Okay. Eight.
Did you call it the chiroprism?
Chiroprism. Well, it was called the chirotile before. Yeah, I don't think anybody, I've never seen chiroprism in the literature before we did it. Do you think the name's all right? You have a better?
No, I don't. I was just curious for a moment because I think Cyril Stanley Smith in his book discusses the tiling, you know, in a descriptive kind of way.
Oh, this one over, you
I
mean
the... I looked at that reference, you might like to.
Oh, Smith on...
His book is called a Search for Structure, yes?
Yeah, Smith. That seems unlikely, and it's a very old, famous tiling going back a long time. So probably he probably refers to that, and it's been called Cairo. So he may well call it that. But
I don't think he does, but he refers to the historical side of it. Yeah.
Uh huh. Interesting. Cairo, right? Cairo. Okay. Eight.
It's a basaltic column.
Sorry.
A basaltic column.
Exactly.
What column?
Flying causeway.
Hexagonal prism.
Oh, hexagonal prism. Maybe, yes. Most people, when I ask, they start out with the regular octahedron, of course, which is not quite possible because it doesn't tile if it's regular. But if you shrink it down a little so that you get 2/6 of a cube, then it would tile. In that case, it has area 5.9. But yes, that is not the best. The hexagonal prism is better, significantly better. 5.7 is the area, and it ties. There's another shape. There's another eight-hedron that ties the hexagonal prism. See if there are any real. So here's the toughest question I've asked today. Anybody knows this? The gabled rhombohedron, it's called. And there it is. It's pictured over there. It has exactly the same surface area. And in fact, you can see how you get from one to the other, right? You can just take the right side of it and rotate it, because when you cut that off, there's a square there. Rotate it and go right from the hexagonal prism to the gabled rhombohedron.
Barn, right, so it's looking there.
So the what? The
somebody assembling a bar on this side.
Oh, yeah, something, right.
Barn.
Okay, now what about N equals, oh, shouldn't have said that. What about N equals 9? Now, oh, this is a good one. Oh, this is my favorite. This is my favorite. N equals 9. What do you know about 9 hedra, the tile? Look at this. We have the audience of experts here. And I'll tell you, it's one that's very familiar to you. The conjectured best 9 hedra. Very familiar shape. Everyone in the room knows this shape. I am sure of that. Well, usually cutting off adds faces. This is something, there was a hint earlier. It's still the hexagonal prism, right? You always have to allow that with an extra infinitesimal face, right? But just as we said, the best 7-gon was the hexagon with an extra vertex stuck in it. You always have to admit fewer faces in the contest of what's the best 8-hedral, 9-hedral tile. And the best 9-hedral tile is the 8-hedral tile, as far as we know.
What do you mean?
All of this is conjecture, okay. Right? The three, I told you about the three cases where we had proofs.
So what it means is you haven't found anything better.
Yeah. So this is the best known. This is the conjectured one right now. 9-hedron.
Yeah. How about 6 pentagons and 3 squares?
6 pentagons and 3 what?
Squares.
6 pentagons and 3 squares? I don't know. Ruggiero, you may have one, so we should talk and check. Maybe you have a suggestion. Maybe there's one. I don't, you know. So, good. That would be fantastic. We'd love to have a better conjecture. Write that down, Ruggiero. That's N equals 9. Oh, well, you can just take like an infinitesimal nth face, or you can take one of the faces and draw a line through it and make it 2 faces. Right? Right. You can always take a face and divide it in half. That's what I should have said, yeah. And that might be the best 9-hedron, we think it is. Okay, what about 10? Oh yeah, before I show you.
But you're only considering 9-hedron the tile.
Yes.
So have you looked at all about what the best 9-hedron altogether would be?
Oh, the best 9-hedron altogether. Well, that will, I don't know what it is. It will not be, no, I haven't looked at that. And it will not be the hexagonal prism. You can always do better by rounding a corner.
Okay, then my idea probably is the best non-tile.
Oh, maybe.
What was your suggestion?
I was thinking of 3 pentagons on the top, 3 pentagons on the bottom, and 3 squares at 120 degrees on the sides.
I think that's the associahedron.
Okay, now 10. This is another one you ought to get. You above all. Not my other audiences. But this audience knows about this famous 10-hedral tile. The B cell! If you actually look at these B cells, Phaeus Toth studied these. If you actually look at these B cells, then they are N-hedra, a 10-hedra.
That was the one I was thinking, but I forgot
to put
the bottom.
So you thought it was a great 9-hedron. You should have said that too. I don't know if you can get out of this one. And it's very interesting because I didn't realize this before, but it's actually half of a rhombic dodecahedron, which we're going to appreciate more later. So stretched a little bit. So that B cell is the best. And then what about N equals 11?
It's
slow down here. John's question made it that for silent ones, can't you adjust things for a tetrahedron?
Yeah, no, this is not the best n-hedron, a tenhedron. It's the best tenhedral tile conjecture. Yeah, Isabel?
I can see the organization you need to use to tile them, to make classes.
Oh, how do you put these into see, basically, it's a hexagon in cross-section. So horizontally, you just pack the hexagons in the usual way. And then the tops just sort of alternate up and down and fit together.
Or take the FCC tiling.
Oh, good. Here you go.
And slice it in half something.
Yes. Okay, so n equals 11.
There's an axial ratio there, isn't there? A free parameter in that.
Yeah, yeah, you have to.
So you remember Linda.
Optimize that.
Yes, if you optimize that. Okay.
Yeah, and circumscribe it around the sphere.
Oh, circumscribe around the sphere. Yeah, that's the rule.
So n equals 11. You know this, Rob. Not from this talk, I trust.
No. From the good cheer.
It was 11. Well, you know, n equals 12, we say Feyerstoss B cell because he was the one that really mathematically presented this in a famous monthly article in which he criticized the bees for having a less than optimal cell, and he proposed instead an 11-hedron by altering it at the top a little bit, and that is the conjectured best 11-hedral tile. Feyerstoss improvement.
So cutting our favorite one at the right level.
Which is half a Kelvin cell.
Which is half of a Kelvin cell.
Not really. Well, not half.
Yes.
Well,
you have to stretch a little. Yeah. Because here we're interested in the geometry. But combinatorially, and after just a little stretching, it is half the Kelvin cell. Yes. 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 Right. Okay, n equals 12. Yes, the rhombic dodecahedron is a beautiful thing. And this is what you get when you put two of the B cells together. So this is what you get by putting two B cells together. Just as if you put two optimized B cells together, you get the Kelvin cell, the Kelvin polyhedron. And now for one of your ultimate challenges here, n equals 13. N equals 13.
That's a bow tie polyhedron that has a
The what did you say?
Bow tie polyhedron.
Bow tie polyhedron. Never heard of it.
Which was one of Matsky's.
Yeah, this is what Andy calls the Matsky cell.
That's right.
Oh, the Matsky cell.
Yeah, sorry, that doesn't tile.
And does it tile?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Sorry.
N equals 13 Matsky cell. I got to take notes here. Oh, degenerate again. Yeah, good idea, Simon. No, we can do better. We can do better. And the idea is, remember, for 12, you take two B cells. For 14, you take two optimized B cells. For 13, you take, where are we here? I see. 12, by the way, there are two answers. I should have mentioned this, I guess. For 12, there are two answers. There's both the rhombic dodecahedron and the trapezo-rhombic dodecahedron, which you can get by just rotating the top half around. So there are actually two. But n equals 13, you take half of the B cell and half optimized B cell. So we're building the 12, 13, and 14 either with two B cells, two optimized B cells, or one of each. And there's no other name for that one. A mess. It's beautiful. That's a beautiful one. So here's what David wanted to say about this.
For n equals 6, the surface area minimizing tile is a cube, but for some n, it's hard even to come up with a guess. A conjectured optimal 10 and 11 hedral tiles are both halves of distorted higher conjectured tiles. Our conjectured 10-hedron is half of an elongated rhombic dodecahedron, and our conjectured 11-hedron is half of a distorted truncated octahedron. Combining these two shapes actually gives us our conjectured 13-hedron.
Yeah, cool. So there's the 13, and for 14, you've already guessed that, right? The Kelvin's truncated octahedron, so the Kelvin polyhedron. Okay, now we're at 14. And now what about 15 and 16 and 17 and 18? We're gonna do these in one fell swoop. Gene, you were pointing at something there. This one. No, you can do better. You can do better than this. This is the best 14-hedron.
You're allowing non-convex.
But we're allowing non-convex polyhedra. So this is conjectured to be the best polyhedral tile. But if you assume convex, but if you allow non-convex, you can do better, of course, by just approximating the curvilinear non-convex curvilinear Kelvin cell. Right? And then in the limit, as n goes to infinity, you would approach the curvilinear Kelvin cell. And yeah, we don't give specifically what the best conjectured approximation would be, but you can always do a little bit better as n increases. So I guess that's the whole... Oh yeah, go ahead.
Suppose you wanted to do 15.
Yeah.
You really do better?
Yeah, so I'm not sure about that. So you could be right that for 15, the Kelvin cell might be the best still.
There's even a 15-hedron that kind of...
But I don't...
You want to cross some line across some... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you do it in the torus, right? I mean, you do it in the quotient.
You want to split at least one of the faces somehow so they can bend a little bit. But then the face it hits.
Yeah, it's not clear, I guess, whether you can do better with 15. Certainly, as n increases, eventually you'll do better.
With 16, I can do better.
Okay, good. But actually, that's a good thing to look at. Can you actually do better with 15?
Has to be one of the hexagon faces.
I know, it looks unlikely, actually. That's a good point. Very interesting, good point. So here's the whole conjecture there. I don't know. That'll take at least another 100 years, I think, if it's even true. So some of these, it may turn out there are better ways of doing it. I don't know.
Your point is the Kelvin cell is nice as a limit of your problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so just solve all of these and then get the Kelvin cell as the limit.
Archimedes would like this.
Archimedes would like this, yeah. Good. So these are the two that I'm featuring for the students right now, trying to eliminate the possibility of non-convex tiles mixed in with convex pentagons and doing better than Chiral and prismatic there. And showing that this tetrahedral tile, which is best in the oriented case, is really best in the general case. And here's a question that I'm interested in. Here's an open existence question. Does an optimal n-hedral tile exist? Can you prove that? We don't know how to prove that. It's known if you assume it's convex, because that gives you diameter bounds, so that's not hard. And it's known that if you don't assist that it be a tile, then the optimal n-hedron is convex, because we know about the wolf shape being the best, and it's convex being the best shape once you give the orientation of the faces. So other special cases are known, but the optimal n-hedral tile, the case I've been talking about today, even existence formally remains open. Open question. So there's the most advanced conjecture. This is the set of all n. That's the big conjecture. So thank you very much.
I don't quite know how to ask this, but it seems to me there are two types of these candidates. There are candidates that are, roughly speaking, isotropic, like the Kelvin polyhedron. And there are many that are based on some prismatic structure, which is anisotropic, but often based on an isotropic structure of a different N that one has cut. Right?
Yeah, I don't know how. Chiro prism. Where do you put that?
Yeah, maybe there are also irreducible prisms. But that's sort of what I'm asking. Is there sort of a hierarchy? Is there classification within this classification that groups them in a certain way?
I don't know. It just looks to me like, you know, in low dimensions and in nice special cases, you'll get lots of coincidences and nice shapes will come up a lot. I don't see any principle there, but who knows?
Frank, there's been a lot of work done by people like Torquato on packing regular tetrahedra.
Yes.
Which is not your problem.
Right.
But is there any interesting analogy, mapping of one into the other, in terms of simply the results?
Well, one thing we can report is that we proved for all of these candidates the optimal packing density. It's one, because they all pack.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I guess you could sort of transition in between, and you could talk about things which come close to packing, you know. So you could say, what's the best tile that has packing density at least 0.99? That would be kind of a fascinating question I never thought about before, right? I kind of like that. Best, that's kind of hard. You could do that, that would be interesting in the plane. So what's the best pentagon that packs with density at least 0.99?
So what are they up to on packing regular?
Okay, so I think Nick is next, and then we'll have Gene's question.
Yeah, go ahead. On the same line, you know, we have in metallurgy that's something called TCP, tetrahedrally closed packing structure.
Right, right.
Okay? So that basically ties.
Yes.
Okay, but the tetrahedra are not, as you said, not isotropic. But there's a sort of a well-known license as to how much you can distort the equal edge length that you take. And have you got anything to say about that? I mean, the class of tetrahedrally close packed system is in fact known and is limited if you do not include quasi crystalline type of tiling.
I see. I know nothing. John might have a comment on that.
So you're saying
you allow some range of shapes. So you have some shape and maybe a few affine images of it together will tile. Those are not even tilings by, you know, except for exceptional cases, they're not tilings by even a single shape tetrahedron.
So I'm sorry.
Moving beyond his.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. The tetrahedra are not rigid. Okay, so you're absolutely right. But there's a systematic way of putting them together. I mean, yeah.
And Gene was asking about what's the latest. I don't even know. Of course, there's a better result all the time of the best way to pack regular tetrahedra, for example.
About 85%.
And the latest is about 85%, says John.
Thank you very much, Frank.
It's my hair. So Lindelof's theorem is about convex.
Lindelof's theorem is about not tiles, it's about the best n-hedron, which we know is convex.
Yeah. Okay, so the question I was going to ask isn't so interesting for n, maybe the 14 here. Lindelof tells us that there's up to 28 dimensional coordinates of 3 parameter space for optimal tiles.
Well, when you use the fact that the centroid of the face has to be the point of tangency, yeah, that gives you reduced.
I don't know what Goldberg's thing is, but is there a theorem that says that in that set there's a finite number of piling solutions.
Well, the tile in that set wouldn't have to be the best tile. Lindelof doesn't apply in the category of tiles. So you don't know. You don't really know that. But you, and Lindelof, by the way, is a very special case of the Wolf theorem that a lot of you are familiar with, which, you know, it's just the case where finitely many directions are cost one and the other directions are prohibitively expensive, and so of course you get this thing circumscribed about a sphere. So we actually all familiar with that. Yeah, good, Simon?
Yep.
We done?
Thank you.